And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 1230 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Once again, everyone, welcome. Nice to have you with us. It's the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn. We are smack dab in the middle of the week. You have nothing?
Good afternoon once again, everyone. This is Dave Malarkey, and it's the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn on WISR. Sorry, we had a little bit of a technical problem there with our audio board, I guess. The volume was a little low. Was that the deal? Okay. Well, we got it working now. Got the gremlins all worked out. Open talk to begin the program today. 283-2525 is our number. 283-2525. And later on the program, you know, we're in the midst of a series of talking with all of the superintendents from the area school districts. And today we're going to be chatting with the superintendent of the Molnitaw School District. I guess, was it earlier this week? Was it this week? We chatted with the superintendent from Slippery Rock. Yeah, yeah, he was with us earlier in the week. We'll have the Molnitaw superintendent with us here today. And we've got, well, over the next couple of weeks, we'll be chatting with all of them. So it's going to be interesting. We're learning a little bit about the schools. Certainly learned a lot about Slippery Rock from Superintendent Alfonso Angelucci earlier. So stay tuned for that later on the program today. Also today, we're going to be talking with Jeffrey Mount Varner. He is a physician, an MD. He's an emergency room physician, emergency doctor. And he has some, he's an African American with three kids, I believe. He is concerned as his children reach the teen years and young adult years about their safety if they're out and about and if they happen to have an encounter with police. And he's written about it, and he emphasizes it is not a bashing of the police by any means. Far from it, he says. Just some thoughts on how to be safe and make sure that you come home. So we'll chat with him. I've not met the man before, but we'll talk with him a little bit later on the program today. Okay, open talk to begin with here. Phone number is 283-2525, 283-2525. The new historical calendar is out from the Butler County Historical Society. Now, I have to get a hold of Pat Collins, who's the executive director of the Historical Society. I'm not sure that this is being distributed yet or whether I just have an advance copy, but it was delivered to me yesterday. I love these calendars, and they just get better and better every year. So this is obviously for 2018. And I have to get a hold of Pat and have her join us on the program with the details, because a lot of folks like to give these as holiday gifts, especially to people who maybe used to live in Butler and have moved out of town. Yeah. And also, they have their annual cemetery walk coming up. I think they've done this every year now. I know they've done it at least a few times. So we'll have to get details on that coming up, too, as we approach the season for all of the annual fall events. 283-2525 is our number. 283-2525. Has anybody been watching the Ken Burns Vietnam series on TV? I have. I missed one episode. At least I think it was only one episode. It's a little confusing to me. What's on when? It's on Channel 13 here in our area, PBS, of course. It's a long series, 18 hours, divided into 10 different parts. So that's what's confusing. A last night when I watched it, it seemed like it was longer than it was when I watched one of the episodes earlier in the week. But it's, man, it is riveting television. It's a documentary, and when you hear someone say an 18-hour documentary, how can you possibly maintain someone's interest for 18 hours? I mean, you know, it could be the greatest movie in the world, and 18 hours is mighty long. I think two and a half hours is pretty long for a movie, to be honest with you. But this is just riveting. It's a documentary narrated by Peter Coyote. At least he's done all of the episodes so far. And it seems to me that it was obviously a very carefully researched piece. Ken Burns is the producer, and that's his modus operandi. He takes years of research to produce these things. But it seems to be a very even-handed view from what I've seen so far. They've talked to soldiers, Vietnam veterans who were there. They've talked with some of the, most of the military leaders are now dead. You know, the William Westmorelands, the Robert McNamara's, the Lyndon Johnson's, they're all gone. But there's tremendous footage of them and archive footage of their speeches and so on. And they've also talked, I found this very fascinating, they've talked with a number of the North Vietnamese soldiers who are, generally speaking, about the same age as our Vietnam vets here in the United States. And that's generally in their 60s now, give or take. And that's been fascinating. Most of them do not speak English, so it's been translated with subtitles. They've talked with some of the South Vietnamese soldiers. One gentleman was on last night for a significant amount of time. Fascinating. It's a man who was shot and wounded in several different parts of his body. Really badly wounded, kept on fighting. A very articulate man. It's been a great series. Like I say, I missed a little bit of it in the middle there. I saw the opening night. I saw last night, which was a long, like, two-hour segment last night. It's good stuff. Yeah. And it'll be available, they've already announced it'll be available on DVD as soon as it finishes its run. And I'm sure it'll be a very popular item. Among certainly Vietnam veterans, I think, people who were lived through that, and maybe by younger generations too, for whom the Vietnam War is, you know, it's like the Civil War. I mean, they read about it in history books, and that's it. They have no personal connection. I hope at least that they read about it in history books, huh? Has anybody seen it? Has anybody been watching it? I've been fascinated. 283-2525 is our number, 283-2525. Happy birthday today to Sophia Loren. Yes, the Italian actress, Sophia Loren, 83 years old today. And a fabulous actress. First time I saw her, probably her most famous role. It was Two Women. A very gritty, hard-hitting drama from the World War II era. And it was made back in the early 60s. I don't know the exact year. Black and white Italian film. Absolutely fabulous. She won the Academy Award for Best Actress for that role. And she's done a lot of other stuff, mainly foreign films, I think. She is Italian, after all, and she was married for a long time to Italian movie producer Carlo Ponti, who's now died. But she did a couple of, she did one comedy that I know of, and that was Grumpier Old Men with Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon and Anne Margaret. It's a film that goes back 20 years, but it's still very, very funny. Sophia Loren, actress. Happy birthday, 83 today. Okay, let's go to the telephones. It's open talk on this segment of It's Your Turn. 283-2525 is our number. Hi there, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Hi.
I heard with interest this morning that the Butler High School had been evacuated again for another bomb threat. Obviously, someone wants to be out of class or out of school, and I was thinking that a possible cure or response on the part of the school board or the faculty is for every day that there's a bomb threat or that students are out of class for that amount of time, the school year is extended by one day. I'd just like your thoughts on this, and I'm going to hang up and listen.
Well, you're assuming that... Okay, thanks. Thanks a lot. It's an interesting idea. Thank you. I'll comment on it in just a minute. I don't have another person here. I don't want to keep her waiting too long or him waiting. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Thanks for your patience. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hello, Dave.
Hi.
I just heard your comments about the Vietnam series on television.
Yes.
Well, I agree with you 100%. I have watched, I didn't see last night's, I have it taped and I will watch it today. But I find it absolutely fascinating, and informative, educational. I was a former high school teacher, and I only wish I would have had that as an aid. I thought that the series Ken Burns did on the Civil War was fantastic. And I would have to put this right up there along that so far.
I would put it even better, and even though I've only seen two or three episodes, mainly because for the Civil War documentary, it was great. You're absolutely correct. But he had to rely on still photographs.
Yes.
And, you know, they would zoom in and zoom out and pan across. They've got video for this. They've got sound of, you know, William Westmoreland and Lyndon Johnson and Ho Chi Minh and all that stuff. So it really makes it so real to me.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I just wanted to confirm, I don't know the purpose of this call, but no. I just wanted to confirm that I agree with you, and I just feel that there aren't enough people watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that's unfortunate.
Yeah, and if you haven't seen any of it yet, I would urge people to try it out. They usually do a little recap in the beginning, you know, of what they've talked about before.
Yeah.
Last night was generally 1965-66, I think, and it was just when the war was heating up. You know, we had advisors over there, so-called advisors, from the U.S. Army. Oh, gosh, even when Eisenhower was president, certainly with Kennedy. But then it started to heat up in the mid-60s, and that's when we just started sending over, gosh, boatload after boatload of soldiers. And you'll enjoy tonight's, or last night's, if you're watching it on the video, you'll enjoy it a great deal.
Well, if foresight was only as good as hindsight, well, we could have saved a lot of lives.
Oh, boy, that's for
sure.
Unfortunate. Yeah. Thanks, my friend.
Okay. Thank you, Dave.
Sure. Bye-bye. 283-2525, our number. Let's go to this line next. Hi there, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave. I wasn't going to say anything. I'm keeping my opinion to myself, but the caller before threw it out there about the school and the threats. Yeah. And it occurs to me that when we were growing up, when things happened in the school, when kids did stuff, and I don't have an example that I can point out, but they made an example of the kid. They embarrassed them in front of the class or whatever, and it's a very effective tool. You hurt their tiny little feelings, but these kids need to understand the impact of what they are doing to their fellow classmates, the teachers, the community, their family. And I think that once they're arrested or whatever and treated through the system, we lose sight of them. We don't know what happens. We don't understand, and the kids, more importantly, don't understand the impact on the family, their finances with fees and with legal and fines, legal fees, the impact on not being able to go to school anymore. They should absolutely be expelled. And I think they have to go back to the school and stand in front of an assembly of their classmates and peers and say, this is what I did and this is what happened to me. My family has been torn apart. My life has been impacted. This was a really bad idea. And you need to know, this is a really bad idea.
That's an interesting point of view. And our earlier caller who addressed this had an interesting take as well. She said they ought to simply make the announcement that for every day the school is disrupted, they'll add an extra day at the end of the school year.
Yeah. I could be. I mean, who knows what they would come up with? That's certainly not a bad idea. But I don't know. These kids need to be held more accountable for their actions, and I don't think that the other kids in the school know what happens. You know, the kid just falls out of the system, and they don't see them for whatever amount of time they're suspended or whatever.
Now, these are Butler Intermediate Highs, 7th, 8th, and 9th grade, right?
Kids with no foresight. They have no clue what is going to happen next.
Yeah.
They just know what they're doing right now, and they have no idea because their brain isn't done working. You know, it's not finished growing.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't understand. They can't see around the corner and down the road what the impact is on their behavior of writing on the bathroom wall.
Well, it seems pretty obvious, doesn't it, that it's got to be a student at the school who's doing this, right?
Well, yeah, it is. It has to be because they're writing it on the bathroom wall. So we know it's an internal problem, and we know that it's a kid problem. And I just think that, you know, as I said, when we went to school, you were pushed out and sat in the hallway, made an example of, had to stand in front of the class with your nose against the blackboard, whatever. But embarrassing a teenager is the worst thing you can do to them.
Well, I agree with you, but the problem is they don't know who it is.
Well, there's cameras outside the restrooms. They're working on it. They will nail it down. They will find out who it is.
Mm-hmm.
They're just taking their time and going through the process.
Well, I hope I agree with you.
Yeah.
The problem is, I was asking some folks in the newsroom today about this, number one, because this is the third one. Butler Intermediate High had to be evacuated again this morning. They sent the kids to this Butler Senior High gym across the roadway there. But this is the third time, the third threat in less than 2 weeks. And, you know, it's got to stop. But I was asking, I wanted to make sure I knew what grades were there. It's 7th, 8th, and 9th. In my day, that would have been junior high school. That's what we called junior high.
That's true. That was junior high.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But I think that means all these kids are definitely minors. And although the tendency would be, you know, especially, hey, three times, hey, you know, permanent expulsion, I don't think you can do that. I don't think you're allowed to do that under Pennsylvania law. Now, I know that might sound crazy, but I think there's a guaranteed right to public education up to a certain age.
Well, they can go to school online. You're not denying them an education. They can stay home and go to school online and still fulfill their requirements, but they need to be pulled out of the social aspect of the school. It has to be a big enough punishment for other kids to take note.
I hear you. I'd have no argument with you whatsoever. I agree, absolutely. Do you think there are kids who know who it is?
Absolutely. They always know.
Yeah.
They always know. They'll always tell. There's always something. There's no point in doing it if you don't tell somebody you did it when you're 13 years old.
That's interesting.
Yes, they do know, and they will find out. But I'm just saying we need to point them out and make an example of them and make them tell the other kids what happened to them and how serious this is because they don't get it.
I like your point about one of the worst things you can do to a teenager that age is public embarrassment. I agree with you. That's a good idea.
And it doesn't physically harm them, and, you know, maybe they'll bruise their little psyche, but maybe they won't do any more bomb threats either.
I hear you. Hey, thanks for the call, my friend.
Sure.
Yeah, good to talk with you. I like our ideas. Yeah. Yeah, the third bomb threat today in less than 2 weeks at Butler Intermediate School, so, you know, sheesh. I mean, one's enough. Enough already. This is ridiculous. Three of them. This is not new, unfortunately. This has happened. It tends to happen in the spring, by and large. I don't know. You know, when it warms up after the long winter and it's close to the end of the school year and I guess there are finals, that's when you tend to see it a lot. It happens not necessarily just at the junior high school level where these kids are undergoing rapid changes, you know, whether it's growth or hormonally or brain growth or whatever. It's a rough time of their lives. But, hey, there are certain things you got to be responsible for even at that age. even at 13, 14. Not, is that how old you are? 7th and 8th grade, 13 and 14, generally around in there? Yeah, because then you have to get into high school before you get your driver's license. Yeah, okay. So, you know, you have to be held responsible for certain things. 283-2525 is our number. Open talk, 283-2525. Were you ever paddled? Pat Parker's our producer and engineer for the program today. Was there still paddling whenever? I won't ask specifically if you were, but was there still paddling in schools whenever you were in school? Yeah, there was corporal punishment whenever I was there, too. Yeah. And I'm not sure that that's the best solution all the time, but maybe. There was one teacher I had in junior high school who was, I don't know, the man, God rest his soul, he's passed away. But he'd probably be put in jail today for... He was a pretty good teacher, too, by the way. Of course, I will not reveal his name, nor even what he taught, but he had a pointer stick. Have you ever see those? A pointer stick? I think that's what they called them. It was a long, thin rod, probably about 3 feet long, and it had a rubber tip on the end. You used it to point at things on the blackboard. Or on a map, you know, you say, well, here is, you know, this is Peru, or, you know, this is Iceland. He had one of these pointer sticks, and he carried it all the time. And he would slam that down on desks. I saw him more than once hit a kid over the back with that thing, you know. You'd go to jail for that today. And I'm not saying it was right then either, but... It certainly put a fear into anybody who was thinking about misbehaving, I'll tell you that. He didn't put up with it. Was it right? Probably not. But, you know, I had the routine punishments as well for minor stuff. You know, put the chewing gum on the end of your nose if you were caught chewing gum. I had one teacher, too, that would have, for minor infractions now, this is not for, this is not hardcore criminal stuff, but maybe if you were talking in class or misbehaving or something, you would have to go up and hold a book straight out in each arm. You know, put a book at the end of your right hand and your left hand, hold your arm straight up. Kind of like an iron cross in gymnastics, you know, the move I'm talking about. Now, that may not sound like much. That was painful. I have personal experience. I was sentenced to do that. You couldn't do it for any more than a couple of minutes. Just absolutely felt like you were going to die. And, of course, there was no permanent injury there. But in line with what this previous caller was saying, you did that in front of the class. You had to stand up in front of the class and do that. And, she may have a point there. 283-2525 is our number, 283-2525. And to get back to an earlier caller who suggested adding extra time onto the school day or the school year for such behavior. I hear you, but I'm not sure that you can do that to individual schools these days, you know. When you have a whole school district... Are you going to punish, you know, elementary kids at Center Township for something a silly seventh grader does at intermediate high? You know, I don't know whether you can adjust the whole school calendar at the drop of a hat these days. That would be pretty tough. Individual students, I don't think you can permanently expel them. Well, of course, we had a caller said, make them take classes online or... sometimes they have a special school, don't they, for hardcore cases where they have one classroom where they make them all go, something like that? The hardcore teen criminals. 283-2525, it's what this is. Somebody's calling in bomb threats. That's criminal activity. Let's go to this line next. It's Open Talk 283-2525. Hi, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
We really like your program.
Oh, thanks for that.
I'm commenting on this school situation. Dave, I think it is beyond sad that these kids think, you know, whoever they are, think that it's a joke, I guess. And I don't think the kids can be embarrassed today. The ones who are doing this seem to be in a class by themselves, although there are enough in the class. I think you need to get to the parents. I think they need to be fined for this type of thing. It is criminal activity. And if it's criminal activity, and it, I think by definition it is, then they need to be expelled. And let the parents figure out, am I going to be able to get this kid into a, you know, charter school, home school, private school? Can you even find the parents? I disagree with extending the school year because 99% of the kids, 97% of the kids, they want to learn, they want to get their education, and move on.
Mm-hmm. I can understand the reaction about wanting to expel, but gosh, I could be wrong on this. I used to cover school board meetings back in the day when I was doing news reporting work, and it seems to me that under Pennsylvania state law, you can't permanently expel. I know that sounds ridiculous, but somehow that's sticking in the back of my mind that you're just not allowed to do that. You can temporarily suspend students, but to permanently expel them, to deny them a public education, I think that's against the state law. I'm not saying that I agree with that state law, but
I understand.
You know, mm-hmm. Because it would be a great deterrent, you know, to say, hey, listen, you do this, you're done, you know.
Yeah, and maybe it's time to change that law.
Well, that's a good
because
point.
Because maybe there was a time when we didn't have these kinds of threats that are affecting hundreds of kids.
Yeah.
And I think I don't have anyone in Butler School District right now, the high school or the senior high. But I'll tell you what, Butler needs a stronger dress code. We've got some. It's abominable. That's about the best word I can describe.
You know, I have talked about this in the past too. I don't know, and some people have accused me of being an old fogey. I don't see a lot of other districts, only because our radio station is in the city of Butler. So I see kids from Butler walking to and from school, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't see kids from Montauk or Mars or whatever. But I agree with you. I'm appalled, quite frankly, at some of the clothing that kids wear. And I don't understand why. Surely that's not against state law, is it, to impose a dress code?
I don't think so, because other schools do have dress codes.
I think it's a darn good idea, you know, myself.
Yeah, and it's not just the private schools that have them. Dress codes have been implemented in public schools in other areas for exactly, you know, these reasons. You know, you get them dressing like hoods, you know, the black clothes, the black, dye on the faces, the chains.
Yeah, the goth attire. Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. And we're allowing it at Butler. What in the world is our Butler, you know, obviously we need a new school board if they think this is the best they can do. You know, when I was in school, there were 1,000 kids in each class, and discipline was better than it is today, where we've got half that number of kids.
Well, I'm just a believer in if you dress more appropriately, you behave more appropriately,
yes.
You know, by and
yep.
large.
I definitely agree with you. I worked for a company that had a dress code. A major corporation in Pittsburgh had a dress code, and they sent when they relaxed it slightly to say business casual. They defined that if you open-toed shoes, beach thongs, things like that, totally out. They said when you dress like you're going to the beach, your attitude is at the beach, and I think that goes a long way with the students today.
Thanks, my friend, for your call.
You're welcome. Bye.
Good to talk with you. That wraps up our time for Open Talk on today's program. We have more coming later in the week. By the way, tomorrow? Yeah, folks from the Penn Theater Group. This is the group here locally that hopes to acquire and renovate the Penn Theater as a live performance venue for concerts and stuff. So we'll get an update. I haven't talked with them. I don't know. A year and a half, maybe 2 years since they've been here. So they'll be among our guests on tomorrow's program. Right now, we need to take a quick break because we're going to be chatting with our first guest coming up on the program next. And he is the superintendent of schools in the Montauk School District, Dr. Sean Arney. And if you can stick around for a couple of minutes, we'll be talking with him on the phone. Coming up next here on It's Your Turn on WISR.
Up to us, we're going your way. Getting there starts here. Just hop the bus, easy and economical. Just hop the bus, no car, no problem. The bus will get you there, 'cause that's what we do. Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us. We're going your way.
Do you have missing teeth or wear dentures? You may have heard of or are considering dental implants. Hi, this is Dr. Bob Todd of Butler Smiles Dental Care. There are many options available with dental implants, and making the right choice can be confusing. I have been placing dental implants since 2004, both full-size traditional implants and small diameter or mini dental implants. There are indications for both, but more and more we are using mini dental implants in a variety of innovative ways. They are easier to place, causing less discomfort, are less costly, and can frequently be used immediately after placement, allowing you to get back to eating the foods you like or smiling again right away. Traditional implants typically have a 4-month healing time before they can be used. I invite you to call our office at 282-7774 to schedule a free consultation to see if mini dental implants are the right solution for your dental problems, or visit us on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Welcome back, good friends. Nice to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program here on WISR on this Wednesday. Another gorgeous day and what has become a long string of glorious days. Dave Malarkey is my name. It's one of those days when you would hate to be back in school. We'll talk about that with our guest on the next segment of the program. It's Dr. Sean Arney. He is the superintendent of schools in the Montauk School District. First of all, Dr. Arney, nice to meet you. You and I have never chatted before, so nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Well, thank you very much, Dave, for reaching out to me. I'm new to the district and new to the county, actually. So hopefully we'll have an opportunity at some point to meet.
Where did you come from? Where was your previous assignment, sir?
I was the assistant superintendent for the Upper Perkiomen School District in Montgomery County, Pennsylvania.
Oh, that's right outside of Philly, right?
Yeah, it was about 35 miles north of Philadelphia, kind of right next to Allentown area.
I see. So how are you liking Montauk and West Sunbury so far? That's got to be quite a different situation from Montgomery County.
Upper Perk is a rural school district in Montgomery County. West Sunbury and Montauk, I love the rural areas. My wife and I were looking to move west, and we like the small communities. And it was really attractive, and so far we love it.
I like rural Butler County, too. And sometimes you don't have to get too far outside the city of Butler to see some beautiful farmland and rural countryside. Well, I mentioned briefly there in my preface that this is one of those days when kids who are just coming off summer vacation are back in the classroom and they say, can you believe this heat wave? A week of perfect weather whenever it seemed like it rained all summer long. Probably kind of tough, huh, to get back to the books and get back to the grind.
You know, it's funny, you never anticipate having a weather pattern like this, especially when you come upon October. But, you know, it's always something, a nice little surprise for the kids, for a nice recess. Our homecoming is coming up this week. So, you know, all the activities relate to homecoming and a nice Friday night football with some nice seasonal weather. had a game a couple weeks ago where I had a layer up. It was really cold, so this will be a nice change.
And we know that it's going to be cold very soon. So
I'm not looking forward to those those mornings where we're possibly making the call for inclement weather. So right now, I'll take a nice string of nice weather.
Well, we're in the process here on our program, our talk and interview program here at WISR in Butler, where we're scheduling chats with the top administrators in all of the public school districts in our region. And it's nothing controversial. It's simply a chance to kind of check in, learn a little bit about the districts. We have great diversity in terms of size and in terms of programs. So we're just kind of checking in on Moniteau. Now, Moniteau is in the northern part of Butler County. It's not the smallest school district, but it's not the biggest either, right? Do you have a ballpark figure, Dr. Arney, on student population there at Moniteau, roughly?
Yeah, we cover about 150 square miles, so we do encompass a large geographical area. We have roughly around just under 1,400 kids from in our kindergarten through 12th grade program, counting the kids that go to Butler County Vo-Tech.
Mm-hmm. So 1,400, I didn't realize it was quite that many, actually. Many of our high schools, many of our school districts, actually, not just the high school, but the entire district, are gradually losing population, and it has nothing to do with where you are, whether it's Moniteau or South Butler or Carn City. It's simply the fact that most families are having fewer kids these days, in fact, far fewer than even a couple of generations ago. Have you seen a slight shrinkage in the student population in Moniteau, just as we've seen in almost every other district?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the historical enrollment for Moniteau over the last 5 years or so, you do see a slight decrease in enrollment, but it hasn't been anything that's really significant. You know, we do see some of our kids go to different charter schools, but not many even attend homebound schools. I mean, our homeschool kids or our charter school.
Mm-hmm.
Very few, and we're working at our high school to, grow our different programs and opportunities to get some of those kids back.
Moniteau was one of the first school districts to begin consolidating elementary buildings. Now, I know you weren't there at the time, Dr. Arney, because this is your first year there, but I believe Moniteau is down. You have a junior, senior high school, and you have one elementary, right? That's it.
Yeah, we have one elementary school in Dasa McKinney, tucked away in West Sunbury. It's a pretty new, updated facility. It's a great place for kids to grow and learn. We have K to 6 there. Mr. Thompson's our principal there. We have about just around 700 kids at DASA.
Yeah, it's a big school. Yeah, it's the only elementary, but it's a pretty big school.
Yeah, right. It is a good size elementary school, but the physical plant's large enough for all the kids. We have a nice property. Classrooms are plentiful. So it's a nice consolidated elementary school.
And your secondary school, it's all in one, right? The junior and senior high students are all in the same building?
Correct. We have one consolidated junior and senior high school.
Are they like in different wings or something like that? I've been in the Moniteau Junior Senior High School, but I've only been to the auditorium to see, plays and musicals and stuff. I've never been in any of the classroom wings.
Yeah, so the configuration does separate our junior and senior high school, different hallways, but they do share common areas like the cafeteria and the gym, and art music. Those programs are shared. But as far as the core content areas go, we keep our junior high school kids separated from our upperclassmen. Mm-hmm.
There's quite a difference, not only in chronological age, but in emotional age, from a seventh grader to a junior or senior in high school, right?
Oh, absolutely. That's why we want to make sure that we keep them separated for most of the day. The only time they probably see each other is on the bus coming or going to school, maybe passing in the hallway for special events.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about education, because I need to get updated on this as well. Are foreign languages still taught in American schools, generally speaking, either junior high or senior high, or in some cases even elementary? Are there still foreign language programs, Doctor?
Well, I mean, at Montetal, we offer Spanish and French at our high school, you know, starting with Spanish 1 and going all the way up to Spanish 4. We offer French in a hybrid online program for kids to matriculate. We actually lost our French teacher this year, but we continued the program by using an online vendor. So the kids have a teacher of record, and they matriculate through their French program just as if they would with a regular teacher. You know, some of our neighboring schools probably have similar language offerings. You know, larger schools may have Latin or German. But I think my idea in working with the high school principal is there's so many offerings, you know, with what's called personalized learning that a student could take any language of choice as long as, you know, we have the platform for them to do that, and they can matriculate through that course as they choose. So we're working on doing that in the next couple years.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you mentioned the teacher problem, because that, over the past decade or so, on again, off again, has been a problem. I know there was a time several years ago when they couldn't find Latin teachers anywhere in Pennsylvania to fill vacancies in school districts. So there's not a whole lot of foreign language teachers anymore. There's certainly not an excess of them, that's for sure.
Well, I know that we looked good and hard for a French teacher for a while, but what hurt us a little bit was we only needed him for half a day, you know, and to find a half-time French teacher was really tough, and that's why we went with an online platform. That's really our hope, and our goal is to develop a program at our high school to where we could offer some things that aren't typically offered within our course catalog in an online setting, you know, to kind of expand the offerings for our kids.
That's kind of the future model. I was talking recently with Dr. Nick Neupower. I don't know whether you've met him or not yet. He's the president of Butler County Community College, and he has shared with me over the past few months the tremendous change in the basic model for education at the higher education level. And man, if you're not on top of online education and distance learning, you're going to be behind the eight ball.
Yeah, you know, we No Child Left Behind was replaced by the Every Student Succeeds Act, and with one of the major components in there is college and career readiness. So a lot of school districts are gearing up to make some curricular changes and programming changes, so we're in compliance and meet the needs of our kids that, you know, matriculate to a four-year college, two-year college, trade schools, military, or just to the workforce. And when you have all those different areas, you know, you have to be diverse in what you offer to the kids. So you almost want to tailor their high school experience to meet their direction of where they want to go. So that's where we're heading. And so we're going to get there. We're writing right now. We're in the middle of, well, actually, we're at the beginning of writing our three-year state-mandated comprehensive plan. So a lot of what we're talking about and discussing and planning for, we're going to put in that plan.
Can you give us just a general overview? There are many of our listeners, I would include myself in this grouping, by the way, who really are not up to date on how high school students choose their programs. When I was in high school, there was very little change. I mean, everybody took mostly the same thing. You know, you had a couple of electives, maybe a foreign language or something like that, but otherwise, it was pretty much the same for everybody. Is it still that way, or are there more individual options available for particularly students at the high school level?
Well, I would say a lot of the courses are similar to the way they were years and years ago. I mean, for example, a student may need four different math courses or four different science courses while they matriculate, but you know, students have the ability to take, for example, they could do Algebra 1, Geometry, and then Algebra 2, or they can matriculate away from Algebra 2 and take another math course that may not fit to a student that may want to go to college, or they may take one that's an AP course, an advanced placement course. So they have the same core courses, but we kind of have other courses that are ancillary around them to kind of fit the needs of kids depending on the pathway they want to go. And what you're going to see is a movement away from traditional high school and course offerings to fit kids, like I was talking about, in what's called pathways. You want to develop programs for kids to tailor to their future goals, their goals beyond high school. So that's where that's where I think you'll see a lot of public education going. I know that's where we're hoping to go at Montauk. But it's a shift in culture within the community. It shifts in culture and teachings with the teachers. And, it takes some planning and preparation. But the goal is, high schools in the future will be tailored to meet the needs of our audience, our kids, and where they want to go.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, that's not always going to be college or university anymore. You know, there's a real concern about that simply because of the rising cost of post-secondary education. And woe be it to a family that has two or three kids of college age. I mean, it's beyond the affordability of most middle-class families these days.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, one of the things the state is saying in their plan is that as school districts are going to be required to do a lot more with college and career readiness, meaning kids in fifth grade are going to have to start being presented with different college and careers, and eighth grade students are going to be, provided a structure to help start making a career plan and exploring different career options, and then our 11th graders will have to have a solid formal college and career plan. And that could mean, any kid, I want to be a HVAC mechanic, we help them, work in collaboration with the VOTEC and get them the courses they need. I want to be a pharmacist. So, our kids are not all going to be four-year college graduates. So they may be a four-year, two-year, go right to the workforce, military, trade school.
Mm-hmm.
The idea with the high school is, we try to teach the kids what the market says is needed, and we marry that with what they want and what they dream, and kind of give them all options.
There was a period, and I'm guessing, by the way, listeners, if you're joining us midstream here, and that happens a lot with people listening to the radio in the car, it's the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey, and we're chatting with the superintendent of schools in the Montauk School District, Dr. Sean Arney. We're taking a quick cursory look at, over the next few weeks, at all of the school districts in our region. So we're looking at Montauk today. Lost my train of thought for a second there. Oh, I know what I was going to ask you about. I saw an aerial photograph of the Montauk School District on your online website, and it's pretty impressive. You have an artificial turfed stadium, it appears, at least from the helicopter shot.
No, we have a beautifully groomed grass field.
You're kidding. That's grass?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah,
I would
we have,
never
have... One of the things, one of our points of pride, we have a lot of points of pride here, but our facility, our staff, buildings and ground staff, they take pride in everything they do, and that I'm glad you noticed that. That is a beautiful looking field, and we just had our bleachers renovated over the summer. And when you watch a game from our home side, and you get a shot of the field, and you look at the glades, that's I'm looking forward to looking at the leaves turn, and that is just a breathtaking view right there.
Listeners, if you've never been up Montauk Way, Montauk Junior Senior High sits just north of West Sunbury, I don't know, 2 or 3 miles, something like that, but it borders on the Glades Nature Area, and at the rear of the Junior Senior High School is the stadium complex, and then down over the hill from that is the Glades area with the lakes and the trees, and you're right, Dr. Arney, it is gorgeous. It is, yeah. So what about, I know what I was going to ask you before. 10 years ago or so, obviously you weren't there, I was asked to go up to Montauk for a few days and judge, I think it was called an academic decathlon. I'm not sure about that. I don't know whether they still have it up there. All I know is there were some kids up at Montauk who were smart as whippersnappers, man, in all of these different disciplines, whether it was solving math problems or public speaking or whatever. That's what I was judging. And they not only did well locally, they would go on to state competitions, national competitions, and they were a real shining light. Do you know if they still have that program, sir?
Oh, yeah. We still have our academic decathlon program here. We just hired a new teacher to teach that. It's actually a formal class, so it's a group of kids that want to dedicate their time and their efforts towards building a team and participating locally within the county and without, outside the county. And I know last year they participated at North Penn High School out in Montgomery County. I only know that because I was still out there, hired here, but waiting to transfer over, and I know that they were participating at North Penn High School and represent Montauk very well. So it's still it's an active club, it's an active organization here at Montauk, and one of our strong academic points of pride.
Well, I had not heard of it before when I came in contact with it, and I don't know, maybe there are other school districts in the area that have it as well, but I haven't run into it anywhere else, and I've always remembered that about Montauk. I'm glad you still have it up there.
Yeah, it's one of it's a very strong club that we have here at the high school.
I'm looking at some other things that have changed a great deal in the, 100 years or so since I was in high school. Sometimes it seems like that. I see that you have on staff a school psychologist. Man, oh man, we never had one of those at my high school.
Yeah, I mean, fortunately or unfortunately, public schools nowadays have full-time school psychologists. They work in tandem with your special ed director and your building principals to help provide, support for kids that have learning disabilities or home situations that need understanding and plans. You know, a lot of times they're called for crisis counseling with the guidance counselors when there's a situation would arise. But yeah, Dr. Berman, our school psychologist, is aces. She does a great job. She's been entrenched in this community for many, many years, knows all the families, knows all the kids, and is able to provide a lot of great suggestions and programming for our kids and families.
Makes a big difference. So this is pretty standard now in schools across Pennsylvania, having a school psychologist on staff?
Well, this is my fifth public school in Pennsylvania, and everyone that I've been a part of have one or several.
Hmm. What about guidance counselors? Do schools still have guidance counselors?
Yeah, we have three full-time guidance counselors within the district. We have one at the DASA, Mrs. Stallard, and then we have two at the high school, Ms. Claymock and Mr.
At the high school.
Or football coach, Wade. Mr. Vogan. Thank you. Forgot his name for a second. Mr. Vogan. So we have three guidance counselors. Pretty good. That's pretty typical for our size. Their roles are changing a little bit. They're always available for the students and families for support and when it comes to counseling and coaching. But at the high school, it's a little different. They're helping their kids, submit their college applications, get their transcripts together, help schedule some college visitations, getting them exposure to all the different opportunities that are out there.
Listeners, please forgive Dr. Arnie for having to pause for a second to think about a staff member's name. He's been on the job at Montauk for 2 weeks? I mean, he's the brand new superintendent there, for goodness sake. So,
well, I've been here since March, but I could picture him, but his name just escaped me. To Mr. Vogan, I apologize.
No need. What do we need guidance counselors at elementary schools for?
Well, a lot of times, your guidance counselors at the elementary level have a specific curriculum that they are required to teach. They talk you know, at the elementary level about good touch, bad touch, stranger danger.
Oh, okay.
Help support the understanding of jobs and careers. And there is a, in the state of Pennsylvania, there is a formal K-12 guidance curriculum that our guidance counselors either directly support through teaching, or they at least support through communication to other content areas. So make sure that, for example, our high school guidance counselors do not formally teach the college and career standards, but we have to make sure that the college and career standards are taught throughout our building in different courses.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think the role of the guidance counselors is going to change even more with construction of the Every Student Succeeds Act and the college and career readiness. There's going to be a bigger focus on, exposing our kids to the different levels of that, normalizing it.
I'm not familiar with this Every Student Succeeds. Is this a federal guideline, Doctor, from Washington?
Yes, so it replaced No Child Left Behind.
Yeah, I'd heard of that one, yeah.
So No Child Left Behind was a federal guideline to basically guide our framework that governed public schools across the United States, and it was replaced 2 years ago, and a plan was just signed by Governor Wolf, I believe within the last week, to formalize parts of the plan to kind of what's called the Future Ready Index. Future Ready Index is now going to be the matrix for evaluating public schools. Before that, it was School Performance Profile, or SPP, or before that, it was AYP, Annual Yearly Progress. Those were the matrix that typically were printed in the paper that evaluated all the schools on, looking at their test scores, attendance, graduation rate.
They were pretty controversial, weren't they?
I think, only speaking for myself, it's very hard to get a global picture of a school district by printing test scores within mm-hmm. the paper. There's a lot more to a kid or to a school or to a teacher or a program besides one snapshot of one matrix in time.
Yeah, well, I didn't mean to put you on the spot as a superintendent.
That's fine. I think my colleagues would agree with
I've heard from a lot of educators that thought that those things were pretty ridiculous, quite frankly, in many cases. Let's put it this way. Not very equitable, because they made it look pretty simplistic to compare school districts, and in many cases it just wasn't fair.
Well, I think, when you look at one test that's standardized across the state, you're not comparing apples to apples when you're comparing performance, so...
Well, I knew that you were new to the job as Montauk superintendent. I was under the impression that you just started this fall, so you started last spring. Have you been there long enough to realize the intense but friendly rivalry that Montauk has, particularly with Carn City, the neighboring school district?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Looking forward to that matchup. I've been made aware of that by not only the community and the teachers, but Mr. Ritzart, the superintendent of Carn City. He and I have talked about that a couple times. I'm just going to let the kids work out the details on the field, but I'm pretty confident. Our football team this year is under the leadership of our new coach, Mr. McCune. He's brought some life back into the program. We're 2-1. Been looking good out there, but let's bring Carn City into any sport. I'm ready for that.
Well, I think that that's an important part of especially a high school career. Having you don't want any arch enemies, for goodness sakes, the heck with that, but a good friendly intense rivalry with a neighboring school, whether it's a girls' basketball or football or girls' soccer, whatever it is, I think that's great. I think that's part of the experience of going through that age in life.
Extracurricular activities are an integral part of high school experience, and, having a rival is, that goes back for, generations, and a lot of families will come out and root on their alma maters, and just to make sure that the pride's still there. That extends beyond high school. I mean, they have it in college, and it's healthy. The kids love to participate and get to show what they can do. I think they get a little bit of boost of energy when they're against their rivals.
I agree. And the Manitou District, by the way, is bordered by Carnes City, obviously, on the east. Butler, I guess, on the south, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Slippery Rock on the west. And then your northern border is, heck, that's Venango County, isn't it?
It is Venango County,
yeah. Are your all public school districts, listeners in Pennsylvania, are governed by school boards? In some districts they're elected at large. In some school districts they're elected by, to represent certain neighborhoods and so on. Your school board members are elected at large, aren't they?
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah. Talking with Dr. Sean Arney. He is the superintendent of schools in the Manitou School District. It's one of our northern school districts, but perhaps a little bit bigger than you may have realized, listeners. About 1,400 students at Manitou. Doctor, I know any school superintendent has a very busy schedule every day. I appreciate you making some time for us. It was great to learn a little bit about Manitou School District by talking with you today, sir.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you reaching out to me, and I look forward to sharing the great things that are happening in Manitou.
Sounds good. Thanks again, sir. So long now.
Have a great day. Bye-bye. Sorry.
Nice man, huh? Yeah, first time I've ever talked to him. I thought he came on board this summer. Kind of embarrassing for me. He's been that way. And we have superintendents change. We have a brand new one in the Butler School District, Brian White. He just took office a couple of weeks ago at the beginning of the school year, I believe. So forgive me for that. But anyway, first time I've had a chance to talk with Dr. Sean Arney. Nice gentleman. We have more coming up. Is it Mars? Is that our next district? I don't know. I have to look at my schedule. But over the next few weeks, we're going to be chatting with top administrators from all of our area school districts. Just a little overview, of what's happening in the schools. It's a little bit different in every school district. Okay, we need to take a break here and get ready for our final guest. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm a little bit behind schedule here, so I'm going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back, and we'll tell you a little bit about our final guest. We're not quite ready to chat with him yet anyway, because he's going to be joining us on the telephone here today. One of our sponsors is the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler, and I know this is a little bit hard to believe, but the end of quarter sale is coming up. Yes, we're almost at the tail end of September. We will be next week. The end of quarter sale this Friday and Saturday at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in the Greater Butler Mart. That's this Friday and Saturday, the 22nd and the 23rd. So what happens at the end of quarter sale? Well, it's only four times a year when we get to the end of a quarter. And every item in the Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store is 50% off. Yeah. Excluding purchase items. All profits remain here in Butler County. See, it's through the operation of the thrift store that the Society of St. Vincent de Paul is able to fund their food bank and their client aid program. Now, it's also a nice service for people that are able to pick up items there. Wonderful items. Gently used items at a terrific price. But it's the profits from the operation of the store that help fund the other great programs. So where are they located? St. Vincent de Paul Society thrift stores in the Greater Butler Mart, Route 8, just south of Butler. There's tons of free parking right at the door. I was down there week before last. I dropped some stuff off to donate, and it's very easy to do so because the drop-off bins are right inside the front door. So you park right by the door and hop in, bada-bing, and you're back out again. It's nice. Their hours are at 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. for the end of quarter sale this Friday and Saturday. That's day after tomorrow and the following day. The end of quarter sale at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store. We stand tallest when we stoop. to help others. Okay, we'll have another message here, and then I'll come back. I want to tell you about what's coming up on tomorrow's program, and we'll get ready to talk in just a few minutes with our final guest here on the program today. So stick around. We'll be right back. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. Coming up on tomorrow's program, our guests will include tomorrow representatives of the Penn Theater Group. Now, this is the group that hopes to acquire and renovate the Penn Theater, long shuttered in downtown Butler. They'd like to renovate it for use as a live performance venue. So, and we haven't talked with them for quite a while, so we'll see what they're up to. They probably have some events coming up. We'll get their latest plans. They still think this is a viable option. They hope to do it. So we'll talk to them tomorrow. Also tomorrow, Stand Down Butler County. You know what that's all about? We'll find out tomorrow. Allison Rose will be here to update us on Stand Down Butler County tomorrow. And later in the week, we'll be talking with folks from St. Michael the Archangel Church. Their Festa Italia is what's this weekend, isn't it? Yes, it's this coming weekend. Ooh, I can almost smell the aroma of that pasta cooking right now. Oh, my. I never miss the spaghetti dinners there. We'll get the details Friday. They'll be with us. And we have some other guests, too. They're going to be here over the next couple of days. And then next week, I want to tell you it's a book talk day on Monday. And we have an outstanding book to discuss. Prospect Area Library folks have selected Flowers, Killers of the Flower Moon. Killers of the Flower Moon. True story of the Osage murders. These were Native American Indian tribes, Osage. And then the resulting birth of the FBI, which I had no idea that the two events were connected. David Grann has written the book, GRANN, and I've just started to read it, and I can't wait to discuss it on Monday with the guest from Prospect Library. It's our regular book talk day, which we do once a month in cooperation with the Federated Library System of Butler County, so we look forward to that on Monday. Killers of the Flower Moon, the Osage Murders, and the Birth of the FBI. Okay, just take a final quick break here, and then we chat with, by telephone, Dr. Jeffrey Mount Verner. He's an emergency room physician. He talks about Home Alive. That's coming up here on It's Your Turn on WISR.
Whether you're a backyard car fixer-upper or an auto repair shop, Milich Auto Wrecking is still the place to go for new and used auto and truck parts. They have been for over 40 years. And compared to factory prices, you'll save big bucks. Milich Auto Wrecking is neatly organized and will tell you immediately if they have the part or not. Open Monday through Thursday, 9 to 5, it's Milich Auto Wrecking, Route 38, the Oneida Valley Road. Look for the big black and red sign. Stop by or call 287-1001. And yes, old Uncle Fred still goes to Milich.
Welcome, listeners. My name is Dave Malarkey, and nice to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program here today on WISR. In this segment, we're going to be talking with guest Jeffrey Mount Verner. He is a medical doctor, and he is the author of a book entitled Home Alive, 11 Must Steps to Surviving Encounters with the Police. Dr. Verner, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about why you wrote this book. What inspired you to write Home Alive, Doctor?
Well, I am a practicing emergency medicine doctor with 20 years experience, and so I deal with death and injury regularly. Mm-hmm. Combine that with the fact that I have an 11-year-old son who was old enough to be killed by the police. I decided that I needed to do my part in this American crisis, and this was my community give back. So after 2,000 hours of research and like interviews, this is what I found and what I was told was what's going to be helpful to all citizens.
Now, you're an emergency room physician. Obviously, you see a lot of the results of when things go bad. But, you know, you're not an attorney. You're not a police officer. Are you qualified to speak on this issue, Doctor?
That is a great question, and it is precisely what makes this a unique book. I am an emergency medicine physician with a unique perspective as it relates to death, pain, and injury. And so the goal of the book is to immediately save lives. It does not deal with the social, legal, historical aspect of this problem. It deals with one unique aspect, and that is get your child and loved one home alive no matter what. And as a result of being an ER doctor and my thousands of interactions with officers, and combine that with the fact that two of my sisters are judges in the area, it gave me unique access to people and people who were very credible and very honest in their help as I wrote this book.
Listeners, a little bit, first of all, about our guest, Dr. Jeffrey Mount Varner, is a Harvard graduate. He is a board-certified emergency medicine physician, and he's a father. And he emphasizes, in fact, it's in bold print on the back cover of your book, Doctor, this is not a police-bashing book. So you want to emphasize that from the get-go, right?
Yeah, I want to emphasize that from the get-go, because often we are distracted and lost because of we always want to defend our officers, as well as I do, too. But this is not about them. This is about you. This is about people and their kids and their loved ones, and steps that we must take when pulled over or stopped by the police.
Are you, I think everyone realizes that these statistics show that a disproportionate number of those being killed in these situations are young black males. Are you directing your book and your advice specifically, Doctor, to young black males?
So you're right. While young black males are bearing the brunt of this American crisis, the part that other citizens or that the citizenry as a whole forget is that there are white, mainly young white males that are being killed too. So the book is directed towards all American families, but it does put a special emphasis on black males. And in fact, there are two chapters that are specifically dedicated to black males. But as an ER doctor who is concerned about saving lives, the book is written for anyone, but mainly parents who have young children or who have young teens and tweens, because the stop will come, and I think we would I think that we need to prepare our children.
This is a question I feel almost silly asking you, because it's obviously very complex, but you discuss in your book how to reduce the number of violent altercations between police and African-American male youth. Can you give us a capsule summary of that? How can we reduce these number of violent altercations?
Well, I think first, being steeped in the community. And what I mean by that is that 95% of the interactions that the officers have are usually with that 5% of quote bad element.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an automatic implicit bias that develops. Whereas if in their downtime or if there are other times, they can go to the schools not for disciplinary reasons, but get to know the community. A great place to visit are the barbershops and the beauty shops, because that's where you've got open and honest communication. That's where you can impact it. In addition, I believe that the police, churches, and the other citizenry, they need to get together and train young people in terms of how to interact with police officers. And that is so important. In the state of Virginia, as of July, they're requiring all new people who are getting driver's license to go through how to interact with police officer training. So they're well ahead of this curve.
Well, that's a great idea. Can you tell us, before we have to take a quick break here, what typically goes wrong when police pull over a black driver? Can you give us a little bit about what are some of the common ways that it goes south?
Well, I think that one of the most common ways is that there is a miscommunication. And while I am a black male, I can just share my experience that and this was prior to writing the book, is that often there's a misunderstanding, there's a misreading of nonverbals, there's a misreading of eye contact. And so and what I think that we all should accept, black, white, Asian, and American, is that when you're pulled over, your ultimate and immediate goal is to A, make it home alive, but the way you do that is you must initially make the officer feel safe. It's not about you. It's about making the officer feel safe, because you want to prevent an escalation of the situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Excellent point. And by the way, something that methinks would apply to any individual, certainly not just a young black male, to anybody who's pulled over for something as simple as a turn signal violation or something like that, right?
Right. And, you know, it's a scary time for anyone who is pulled over.
Exactly.
And so I think if you prepare in advance when that time happens, there's a less sense of fear. Still stressful, but there's a controlled fear there.
Mm-hmm. A quick break, listeners. This is fascinating stuff. We'll come back and pick up our conversation with Dr. Jeffrey Mount-Varner about his book, Home Alive, 11 Must Steps to Surviving Encounters with Police. In fact, when we come back, we'll talk specifically about some of those steps that he outlines in his book. Back in a moment. Are you looking for a new pharmacy after hearing news of Kmart closing? Celebrating 10 years of pharmacy care to the Butler community, locally owned Institute Hill Pharmacy can fill your prescriptions in just 10 minutes. We take all major insurance plans, stock a variety of over-the-counter medications, and pride ourselves on fast, friendly customer service. And we are excited to offer a $5 off coupon for any transferred prescription from Kmart customers. Some restrictions apply.
Check out Institute Hill Pharmacy on Facebook or stop by their location on East Jefferson Street.
Institute Hill Pharmacy. An old-fashioned pharmacy, just the way you remember. Welcome back. If you're just joining us a little bit late, that's fine. Here on It's Your Turn on WISR Today. My name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest visits with us by telephone. He is Dr. Jeffrey Mount-Varner, MD. He is a physician, an emergency room physician, Harvard graduate, and he's the author, for the purposes of our discussion today, of a book. And by the way, this is not War and Peace. It's a compact book. It's a little less than 100 pages, a paperback. The title is Home Alive, 11 Must Steps to Surviving Encounters with the Police. And if you weren't with us for the first part of our conversation, we emphasize again, Dr. Varner does, this is not a police bashing book. So you talk about 11 steps needed to safely get through any interaction. Can you mention a couple of these? Because I know you detail all of them in your book, Doctor.
Sure. One of them is it says cry. When you get pulled over and things begin to like escalate, cry. People say, well, isn't that just ingenuous? And I say no, because the overall goal is what? To make it home alive. So anything you can do to de-escalate or to slow that situation down, or to assist the officer in viewing you in a more human way, in a way that makes them want to help you, then you do that. In my own life, for instance, I am a congenital stutterer, have been that way for the last 50 years of my life, and I am 50 years old. And so I often just let myself go, and I stutter. What that does is it slows the situation down. It allows the officer to like humanize me. In addition, this one may seem strange, but bear with me. Don't look the officer in the eye for too long, especially if the situation is escalating. The reason for that is it two things happen. It allows for the officer to interpret and maybe misinterpret how you are looking at them, and then it also allows it allows you to misinterpret the officer's look. So it's better that, hey, you give brief eye contact and look forward, and whatever you do, de-escalate the situation.
I'm thinking that there are probably some people in law enforcement who might take umbrage with the need for your book and some of your advice, acting in a self-preservation mode out of fear. Have you had any reaction from law enforcement, from police officers about your book? Have you had any positive support for it, sir?
I've had both. I've had positive support, and I've had reaction. And as I speak to them, I tell them, I highlight, this is not about you, officer. This is about America and making America a safer place. And it's also about assisting you in getting home alive. The facts are the facts. 3.4 Americans are killed each day by the police. That's almost double any other industrialized country in the world. And it's going to take years to fix this problem. Years. What this book does, it offers immediate life-saving solutions that, when applied, it immediately begins to save lives. And this is not about police bashing, and the book does not do that. But it's also about speaking about the facts of the data. And the data is very clear. We have a problem, but there are fixable solutions that are going to take time.
I'm glad you mentioned it. I know you acknowledge in your book the fact that, hey, police officers want to make it home alive, too. And we had, not too long ago here in the Pittsburgh area, a tragic case where an officer pulled over an individual for very high speeding, you know, 90, 100 miles an hour. The officer got out of the car, walked up, and he was shot dead through the window by the driver.
Oh, wow.
Just like that. So, I mean, officers want to make it home alive, too, and you acknowledge that. Can you tell me, Dr. Varner, what about the reaction you've had from the African-American community? Positive, negative, any reaction at all to your book, Home Alive?
There has been a great deal of reaction, a great deal of support for the book as well. But what I found key is those people who have kids have a more favorable and intense reaction. Young people, admittedly, because I have spoken about this at colleges, they are less drawn to the book because if we think about it, when we were 18, 19, and 20, the world was great, it was fair, we could do any, we felt as though we could do anything. We were invincible. So to tell an 18 or 19-year-old, hey, make the officer feel safe. If things escalate, don't look him in the eye, and you've got to be humble. That's not a message that they're prepared to hear. Whereas parents, because of our experiences and our unique desire to get our children home alive, we can hear it. And when we hear it, we've got to teach it to our kids. And let me just add, as I say to my 11-year-old son, Joffrey, and my 14-year-old daughter, Brooke, when stopped, if stopped, if you come home, I can fix you. No matter what happened during that stop, I can fix you. But if you're killed, there's nothing I can do. So do what you have to do. Be who you need to be. Act how you need to act. Get away from that situation alive. And whatever went wrong, if something went wrong, then we can fix that later.
There are more listeners' concrete tips in Dr. Varner's book, Home Alive. Some of them are common sense, but as the doctor said, when anybody is pulled over, the adrenaline starts to pump. You get excited. You get irritated. Sometimes you get mad. You talk about things like never running, never making any sudden movements, never keeping your hands in your pocket, never resisting the police. How did you develop these 11 steps, Dr. Varner? You talked with, I'm assuming you talked with police officers and judges and stuff like that?
Yeah, I had unique access as being a practicing ER doctor and someone who's ran a level one trauma center. I knew a lot of officers, engaged with them. So I was able to go back and interview them. Combine that with the fact that my sisters are judges where I live. It gave me immediate access because there was that spirit of like trust. And then when you add on there good old-fashioned study and research, which totaled about 2,000 hours, and then add on there getting the community input, add a little data in there, and these were the most important 11 steps. Obviously, there are more, but just in terms of immediately saving lives, immediately making a life difference, these are the 11 steps.
And one final point before our time runs out here. You caution that you must be, if you have other people in the car, they have to be aware of what's going on too, because the officer is going to be looking at them too. They have to be focused on the same goal, not just the driver, right?
Absolutely. In fact, some people joke, but it is the truth. You have to have almost a checklist or a speech to people who are riding with you, because when you're pulled over, everyone is like pulled over, and everyone needs to know how to act. And as the driver, it's up to you to educate them. Hey, if we're pulled over, this is how we act. And there's a lot more information about this if they go to drsavinglives.com. That's drsavinglives.com. But at the end of the day, Dave, the goal is to get our children home alive, because tears taste salty. There is no color to like tears. So we don't want to have to endure the loss or the injury of a loved one.
Is that website that you just gave, Doctor, is that where people can find your book too?
Yes, they can purchase it and find out more information on Doctor Saving Lives, but just for a straight purchase, they can go to Amazon.com as well.
Our guest listeners, Dr. Jeffrey Mount Varner, an emergency room physician, Harvard graduate, the author of Home Alive. That's the title of the book, Home Alive. Dr. Varner, nice to meet you. Nice to talk with you today. Thank you, sir.
And thank you very much. And thank you very much for bringing this issue front and center to your listeners.
Sure, sure. So long now, sir.
All right, bye-bye.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 7878. The pick 3 is 687, 687. The pick 4, 2803. The pick 5, 62846. The wild ball for each of those was 4. The treasure hunt, 4, 7, 19, 20, and 22. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $10,000.
Safe Hunting PA in a minute. Brought to you by Ram.
This year, the perfect hunting trip starts with the perfect hunting truck, the 2017 Ram 1500. This adventure-ready pickup packs an available 395-horsepower Hemi V8 that delivers an impressive 410 pound-feet of torque. Plus, the 2017 Ram 1500 offers an available 8.4-inch touchscreen that'll connect, entertain, and guide you to the most remote hunting spots known to man or beast. Go to ramtrucks.com and see your Ram dealer today. Ram and Hemi are registered trademarks of FCA US LLC.
The fall means archery hunting season, and the Pennsylvania Game Commission urges hunters to consider these safety tips. Inspect your bow and arrows for damage prior to use. Carry broadhead tipped arrows in a protective quiver and never walk with a knocked arrow or bolt. Keep crossbows pointed in a safe direction and keep your thumb and fingers away from the string. Properly identify your target. Always make sure someone knows where you are hunting and when you expect to return. For more information, log on to PennsWilds.com.
We thank our guest today, certainly Dr. Jeffrey Mount Varner, with whom we just chatted. Also earlier on the program, Dr. Sean Arney, Superintendent of Schools in the Manitow School District. Tomorrow on the Thursday edition of It's Your Turn, we start with Open Talk. We'll have guests with us from the Penn Theater Group. Their hope is to acquire and renovate the Penn Theater, the long-vacant Penn Theater, make it into a live performance venue in downtown Butler. Also on tomorrow's program, Stand Down. I'll tell you what that's all about. And on Friday, guests from the Pennsylvania Military Museum. Did you know we had one? A military museum in Pennsylvania? We do. Find out about it on Friday. Hey, I'm Dave Mullarkey. Thanks. Good program today. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday, and we'll see you tomorrow at 12:30 here on It's Your Turn on WISR 680.